The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey there, friends, and welcome back to Afternoons with Mike here on the Shepherd Radio Network from the NRB. It wraps up on Thursday, that's today, but we're going to be having several days worth of interviews that I've been able to capture while at this great conference. Today, we're going to start off with Jim and Shannon Porto, and their story is nothing less than amazing.
What an honor to have a couple here, Jim and Shannon Porto. They are authors, and what an incredible story. Before we began this interview, just sitting here talking to Jim and finding out some of the stats on your life, I don't know that I've ever met anybody that has the background that you have. Share a few of the things, Jim. First of all, welcome to my program.
Well, thank you, Mike. Shannon, I'm really glad to be here. And I think I look forward to not meeting anyone that has a comparing background. You know, we laugh now, of course. You know, when you're healed, it's different to look back and see things through a different lens, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
But yeah, as you were asking, talking a little about Shannon and I, we've married 35 years this past November, been together 40. We started dating high school sweethearts, and we got married at 20. We wrote a book called Hope is Where the Heart Is, and the book is about hope. That's why we called it that. But one of the key things about it is we talk about no matter where you've been, no matter what you've been through, what you've done or been done to you, there is hope, because we serve a God that gives hope.
Yeah.
But even beyond that, He's equipped us to discover. And if we can just get past that moment and discover the remedies, they're out there. There's help out there, but we have to get that hope, that belief that something else can come. It's a little different than faith, because hope requires a little bit of pull, right? But so we wrote this book. We wanted people to know, no matter what, you can have hope. It's one of the reasons we were very raw in the book. So we talk a little bit about, well, a lot about my childhood growing up.
And that's the part I was referring to. So tell me a little, tell us all what you told me a moment ago.
I will. My mom and dad divorced when I was about 8 years old. Dad disappeared, not because he's a bad guy, but rather, you know, we're all broken in some area, and Dad did that. I didn't see him until I was about 13, probably 14, something like that. My mom didn't have any skills, went to work the best she could for us. We were in really, really in below poverty at that point. When people talk about government cheese, that was my favorite cheese in the whole wide world. It was the best cheese that ever came out.
Yeah.
And it was free to us.
Yeah, right.
And so mom always felt like she needed someone to complete her life. And so she married my dad, but then divorced. A few months later, after we were in this little place in Carrancourt, Louisiana, she met another guy, fell in love with him. And then after a few months later, she fell out of love with him. Then she met another guy, and a few months fell in love with him. And then she fell out of love with him. And then it so on and so on.
And that cycle repeated over
11
and over.
Times. So I have 11 stepdads.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And, you know, growing up, going through that, you know, it's odd because you don't know anybody else that has that many. But you just go, hey, it's life. It's not bothering me. I'm doing my thing, so to speak. And, you know, these guys were not great guys. Let me put it that way. But we, it did impact me. It taught me some things like you're replaceable. It taught me some things that relationship isn't as deep as you think it is. Now, was it spoken? No. But the witness of it, that's what I begin to do. And what I determined in my heart at that point is you can't be you. And so I built this wall, unaware of it.
Mm.
And then I painted pictures on the other side of whatever I needed to feel like I need to say, think, act, or do so that those people or people would accept me. And it came to a place where I didn't know who I was anymore. Okay. Shannon and I got married at 16. I'm sorry, we started dating at 16. It was a different time for that. Mm-hmm. We started dating at 16 and got married at 20. She didn't know my past. In fact, I didn't share. She knew the husbands my mom had, but she didn't know the part about me being sexually molested by my great-grandmother and so a couple other people in church. I didn't share those things. I just never talked about it. I didn't really see it as something that was this traumatic event that happened to me, although it was. And it impacted the way I saw relationships and sex and things like that. Shannon and I are married. We take a little church as a youth pastor, and then we end up in Connecticut as a youth pastor, spent 16 years there, went to another church, started pastoring there. God was really blessing, and I was done.
And all this time, she doesn't know the background.
Mm-mm. I was done. One pretty nice day. I came home from work. I walked in. I went into our living room. I said, would you have a seat in here? This was a room where I had prepared sermons. I was a minister at this time. Very great church, a great church, still there in New England. We had grown. We had a dream center, a couple of campuses. God was really blessing. And I walked in and I looked at her in the eyes and I said, I don't love you anymore. I like you, but I don't love you. And in fact, I believe I'm in love with someone else. Just less than a week later, Mike, I quit everything. I quit the church. I quit my relationship with God. I gave up my ordination that took so long to get as an Assemblies of God minister. And I left. I deserted and left. Shannon was left to sell our house with a $50,000 loss. People in the church didn't know what to do. A lot of people don't know what to do. They pray, but they don't know how to reach out. They're afraid of, I don't know what to say something or say the wrong thing, or maybe they just don't know what to do with it. And so Shannon spent a lot of that time alone, but God really worked in her heart where she became the best she could physically, intellectually, emotionally, and spiritually. So I looked at her and I left. Shannon begins to get with God. I go to the craziest places. My life was as destitute it could be at that point. After a period of time of being living with my father, starting a little construction company, trying to make some money, after all the mean things I'd said, and in the book, we're extremely raw. We share these things. I've had people, in fact, my publisher three times came and said, are you sure you want to say this about you? Wow. People are going to hate you.
Yeah.
And I said, they need to know the power that's in hope. They need to know that. And so we agreed. We spent 2 years writing this. I'm down there. Shannon sends me a text, and she says, I'm in Richmond, Virginia. She says, hey, I hope you're doing well. We hadn't spoken probably in two or three months. She said, I hope you're doing well, and I just want you to know that, you know, I'd love to talk to you sometime. I thought, but I texted her back for some reason. I don't know what the reason is, but I think it had a spiritual influence. And I said, sure, it'd be great to text. It'd be good to talk sometime. The phone rings. I'm like, oh, my Lord, it's her. What did I do? She had just gotten off a plane in San Antonio. She was heading to her brother's wedding, a wedding I was supposed to perform, but of course could not any longer. She said, hey, what's going on? I said, I'm just down here working, trying to figure out. She said, well, it's nice to talk to you. I hope you're doing well. I said, yeah, I'm trying to straighten some things out, you know, broke up with the other woman, all kind of things are going on. She says, okay, what would you like to, you said you want to talk. You want to talk sometime? I said, sure. She said, well, why don't you come now to San Antonio? I said, well, no, I can't come to San Antonio. And she said, why not? I said, well, first of all, your dad's there. And for everything I've done, in Texas, they can kill you just because it had it coming to you, okay? I've done plenty.
And you did have it coming.
And I deserved every bit of it, you're right. So let me kick into the end of this, or at least into the where it moves. And so she said, okay, I can understand that, but why don't you come anyway? And I said, well, to be honest with you, I can't afford to come. I don't have the money. She said, do you have anything to write with? And it's hard for me to get through 15 years. She said, you have anything to write with? And I said, yeah, of course. And she said, would you write this down? And she gave me her credit card number. Mm. She said, buy your plane ticket with that. She put her money where her mouth was with no inclination externally of anything would change.
Well, she also put her own feelings down the line because...
I can't fathom it.
I'm surprised she wasn't throwing her credit card at you, much less using it to buy a plane ticket.
Yeah, you're not the first one that said she didn't buy... They thought she would buy a hitman with it or something, you know. And I said, okay. Flew up there terrified, got off the plane, saw her. She was so powerfully beautiful, every part of her. Walked up. People say when you walked off that plane, it must have been overflowing with love. And the truth is, no. It's not what it was about. I thought she was beautiful, but I had been separated for a while in my mind.
How long has this been at this point?
That was about a year and a half after my affair and leaving the church and things like that. But I had been probably 5 or 6 years closed off internally from her. You see, intimacy builds passion. Dr. Robert Sternberg wrote this in his study at Yale. Intimacy builds passion, and that's the desire to be together. See, I wasn't being intimate with her. She didn't know the real Jimmy because I couldn't show her because I thought she might reject me. And that became unconsciously competent. I didn't even know I was doing it with people anymore. We get up there. We start talking. I said, we could talk more. She found this place called Marriage Helper. I worked for them for over 10 years, became their chief operating officer, and I was their main speaker for almost those 10 years. I started a coaching program, 17 coaches. God's been blessing there. And they taught some stuff that we were able to apply, get with God, changed our life. And it took about 9 months for us to get back together because she lived in a different place. But we finally got back together. And that next year, that company hired me to come and help. And Shannon and I joined them sharing this truth with folks.
Wow. What a story.
Thank you.
Let me hear from you, Shannon. I mean, this has got to be a story for the ages. You know, you're separated all this time. Mm-hmm. You find out the husband that you'd been with, for how many years had you been together at
that? We were married 20.
20 years when all of this, just the wagon wheels fall off in one day. How is it that you're able? I mean, I know God's a God of forgiveness. Mm-hmm. He's a God of second chances. But a lot of people would have said to you, you're crazy for allowing this even to. I'm sure people did. Yeah. And what is your response to them at that time?
For me, it was because we had been together for 20 years. And he had told me those whole 20 years, you know, I love you. I'm never going to leave you. And he was not the Jimmy that I knew. He was not the man that I knew, a man that really honored God and loved people.
Well, he was doing all the right things, right?
Externally.
Yeah.
Externally. But he wasn't, but he was not the man that I knew and loved. And then I also felt, as you said, God is a God of second chances, third chances, I felt like I needed to, I didn't want to end anything. I didn't want to give up. I knew that God didn't want divorce. I felt like he wanted us to stay together and have a purpose for our marriage. Hmm. And so I didn't want to give up. And so I did it.
That's amazing. I mean, that is really, you had to be thrilled to realize.
It was unbelievable. You know, she used to say this and I've never let it go. She said, Jimmy was a good guy doing a bad thing. She never villainized me and made me evil. Now, I did evil, but she never did that. And I think that's key, you know, in her own mind, because it led her steps towards grace and forgiveness.
Yeah. I think, Jim, it's really incredible to hear the story of a person that started off. I think you're so right when you said you wouldn't let anybody in, because you were kind of, your picture was messed up as to what relationships were.
It really was. And you know, you can't. There's no reason to talk bad about the church, but even in the church, you experience these things, right? Yeah. Where people will hurt or abuse because people are broken. And I've had ministers ask me afterwards, people that worked for me. We had 50 people on staff at that point. And they would say, why didn't you talk to me? We were friends. We were close. And I remember thinking at the time, right afterwards, thinking to myself, I'm like, well, I'm going to tell you. You work for me. How are you going to help me? You're just going to expose me or other pastors. And I'd say, well, why would I talk to you? You're upset people come to my church, or you're this and that. You know, I had reasons that I didn't trust. And so I just wouldn't do it. I refused to do it. Man, and when you isolate yourself, you give the enemy an extra hand in you.
Yeah, yeah. Without a doubt. So you guys are getting back together. Are you in counseling at that point? Do you have some people that are speaking into your lives?
Yeah, we were really fortunate. I have a mentor by the name of Joe Beam, Dr. Joe Beam, and he really spoke into our lives. He was the one who made the original version of the workshop we went to, and he spoke this truth into us. He taught us a lot of great things on how to seek forgiveness, how to offer difficult words and difficult things you need to tell so you can remain intimate. Because mm-hmm. I said earlier that intimacy is so important, Mike, because that's what breeds the passion, the desire to be with someone. And because I was not intimate with her, the passion was manufactured. But as we got back together, I can tell you without hesitation, there's nobody I'm really more open with. I could tell Shannon anything, and I've said some things that shock her, but we have agreed that we're going to be so intimate that nothing can get in the middle of that to break our long life relationship up. Does that make sense?
And,
but we have greater passion
sure.
than we've ever had, too.
Well, you guys known each other since you were 16. I mean,
40
crying
years.
Out loud. Yeah, that's a long time. You guys look much younger than than I. But I'm amazed that, number one, I think it's a beautiful thing. Even though there is heartache and there's betrayal, and this is not the prettiest story that I'm sure you, when you set out, you wanted to have written about you. But the hope that comes is in spite of that.
Absolutely.
And in the face of that. And this is where true hope shines, is because the people that need it are people who are broken.
Well, of course. And this is not just a relationship book. I want to be clear about that. You know, we had people look at it, 23-year-olds, 24-year-olds, single, all up through all the gamut. And what we got back from this was, this isn't a relationship book. That's what we were told.
Yeah.
This is a book that speaks to hope with our childhood, talking about Shannon's growing up, and then this relationship, and then how we get back. The last chapter is called Shannon is a Hero. And it is because...
Well, she is.
How could it not clearly. Be? You know, I would have named the book that, but, you know, it was just a little bit too much.
Yeah,
said.
Right.
But the truth is, the hero and is the fact that is that she trusted God, but she also did what she needed to do to be the best human version of herself. She used God's gifts there. And as a result, her being with God, she was able to offer that grace, you know, towards me.
And I think that is an epitome of the grace of God, what God has given you, because there's nothing about that that would make Shannon say, this is a good deal to come back to the guy that betrayed me.
Well, it wasn't. If you would have looked at me at that time, you would have been like, really? And I mean, you should tell them about it. She went to a Christian counselor and explained this one.
So I started going to a Christian counselor, and I explained my situation, everything that was going on. And the only thing she told me and the first thing she said to me was just go divorce him and just be done with it.
I can get it. Yeah.
And I didn't want to hear that at the time because I was like, one, it's just not who I was. It's not, I came from a divorced family and I didn't want that. I knew the effects of divorce. We have no children, but I still knew the effects. We have friends who have children, or you have nephews and nieces, and I wanted to be different and stay in the course of my marriage. I felt like in life we have to work for everything. You do. So I wanted to stay and work on my keep my marriage together.
It's an incredible story, and I'm touched in my heart because I know the pain. I've spent 36 years in ministry, a lot of which I was doing pastoral counseling, and you know that the pain of a marriage breaking apart like that sends some women to a point where they're not even desirous to ever see the person again. And I just think it's marvelous, the picture of God's grace, that God gave you the faith. And that not only did you put your money where your mouth was with regard to buying him a ticket, but also with wanting still to be together and pursuing him. I mean, bro, that is really a picture of God's grace for you.
I could tell you that my relationship with the Lord and my understanding of him.
Yeah.
And you could tell it hits me.
Yeah.
I really understand his grace. I don't understand how he gives it, but I comprehend it. I feel it. And it's one of my favorite things. I think if it says, the word of the Lord came to Jonah a second time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so happy, so blessed that the calling of God is without repentance, that the power of God is that way. And I'm joyful because of it.
One thing that this reminds me of is the fact that the betrayal, the desertion, all of those things that you guys experienced in your marriage is what we do to God all the time. And he is to us what Shannon was to you.
It's a powerful story of the real redemptive purpose and power of God.
Yeah.
It really is.
Prodigal God. That's what he loves us and calls us back and runs and kills the fatty calf for us. Unbelievable. Well, you guys are a real delight to talk with.
Thank you.
Give us the details on the book.
It's called Hope is Where Their Heart Is. You can get it anywhere they're sold. Any book, any stores, anything like that.
What a great title.
Thank you. We worked hard on trying to think of what that was going to be.
Yeah.
And, you know, the argument behind that is that wherever you have your heart will determine where your hope is.
Yeah.
And so, but you get that anywhere. It's also Audible and Kindle and all those kind of things. And we just love to be able to bless you. You can also visit us at jimporteau.com, JimPorteau.com.
Okay.
We have a form you can fill out if you want information or you want some help or coaching, and we can help you find some help. We're here to serve.
Now you're here at the NRB. What are your hopes? We got 1 minute left. What's your hopes?
Well, you know, I've never been before, so I'm kind of excited. And our publicist has us doing some of these. So my hope here is that we can get the word out and be able to get this book in more people's hands. We've been blessed on Amazon. We were number 3. But what we don't care about the ranking unless it means people are getting touched.
Well, I think you guys have a story to tell.
Thank you.
And I'm glad you're telling it.
Thank you so very much.
And thank you for being on The Shepherd.
We loved it. It's good.
All right. God bless you. Jim and Shannon Porteau, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Pastors and financial leaders, do you need expert accounting or tax help? Do you have payroll or 1099 questions? Do you need a ministry expert to help you acquire real estate for your next project? If the answer is yes, yes, and yes, visit PetraWorldwide.org. Petra Worldwide has been strengthening ministries to transform humanity since 2007. Visit PetraWorldwide.org or call 855-481-9095.
Palm Beach Atlantic University Orlando offers three distinct areas of study: an evening Master's of Science in Clinical Mental Health Counseling, an evening Bachelor's of Science in Human Services, and our new daytime Bachelor's of Science in Nursing. All of our courses are offered at our beautiful campus on Millennia Boulevard. For more information or to schedule a tour, call 844-PBA-ORLANDO. That's 844-PBA-ORLANDO. Here at the NRB, and with me is Sean Tice. Sean has been on my program a number of times, my friend, and we may have crossed paths even at the NRB. You're usually here, right?
This is my second year.
Yeah, okay. So last year, it would have been in Nashville, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Every other year, it's there. So it's fun to get together at this event and gives us the opportunity to do what we're doing today, face-to-face interviews. A lot of people like yourself, not in Orlando, but I get to do them over the phone or another type of connection, but it's really great. Sean is the Life Factors Ministries president and founder, and that is a Christian nonprofit 501c3 that helps individuals overcome things in their life, failures, difficult pasts. I know you and I have talked before about some of the experiences you've had in counseling, especially young people who they have a hard time with that, even a father-son relationship, something they've never experienced.
Yes, our whole ministry was birthed off of a book I started writing after I graduated from Bible college. I was going to be a full-time pastor and wrote this book for fatherless guys, sharing my stories, and I told other people what they went through. We covered the top 30 things you deal with being fatherless, and then it turned into an entire ministry of, you know, things that we created. We formed Life Factors Ministries then as a nonprofit 15 years ago now, and it's been amazing. Our focus primarily is on fatherless families, single moms, grandparents raising grandkids. We even added fatherless to Life Factors Fatherless Ministries. We added the word fatherless to it because we focus so much on it.
And you know, one of the things that's talked about by just about every person that's either in the pro-life movement or really talking to this issue of the problem in our American culture today, it's often pointed back to the fact that fathers are just absent in the home.
Yeah.
And that's a real cause that you've found, right?
Yes, my dad left when I was 9 months old. 9 months old, he came home in a drunken rage, kicked my mother, my brother, and my sister out of our house, but for some reason he kept me, the little nine-month-old baby. And then my mom got the cops to come, they showed up, and like I said, he was drunk, and he threw me across the room to the cops. And right after that, he left our small town in Pennsylvania, got on a bus, and went back to his hometown of Las Vegas, Nevada, never came back. So I've lived it. I lived this fatherless journey.
Yeah.
And it's a challenging thing.
Yeah.
I never met my birth dad until I was 15 years old. But I was blessed to have people pour into my life and help me along the way. And then I've been able to, as an adult, invest in other kids' lives that are going through it as well.
Now, I think a lot of people believe that when that happens to them, when their birth dad, let's say, does to them what he did, what yours did to you, that there's no replacement for that. But what you found in your life is that, yeah, it's not the same as my dad being there, but that's not to downplay or to underplay the role that someone as a mentor steps up can really make the difference, all the difference in the world, right?
As soon as my dad left, my grandfather picked up the pieces and started becoming my dad for me. And he was my pap. I called him pap. And he just filled that void. He disciplined me. He loved me. He cared for me. I moved in with my grandparents when I was in second grade and lived with them. And they were my parents. I mean, it was such a great experience, to be honest with you, for me.
Your grandfather.
And my grandfather passed away when I was in sixth grade. And then I had mentors. I had a youth pastor that filled the gap. I had youth leaders. And then I had a guy that still to this day is like my dad. His name's Jim. And there's no blood relation, no marriage relation, but he's invested in my life just as a caring mentor. He's gramps to my kids, his wife's Grammy Deb to my kids. And it just shows you that you can fill that void. And then also primarily through God. That's why we created God as my dad, because God is our dad. Now, he'll provide other people to help fill that gap, but he's the one that's ultimately fathering us.
You know, and I remember the times we've talked before, Sean, where that importance of really passing that on to your children, the love and the respect that you learned, that you had, that you didn't get to have from your own dad, but you are able now, and you're doing that with your own son, evidenced by the fact that you've got one here.
Yeah, he's tagging along with me. He's 14, and we said, instead of going to summer camp, why don't you just go to the convention with me? We can learn a lot of stuff here.
Well, this is quite an experience. One of the biggest NRBs in several years. I heard the number 4,000.
Yes.
Attending together, and they're hearing things. I mean, this very subject matter was brought up even last night by the governor of Florida, when he talked. And he talked about the role of dads. And we've got to see this concept, the biblical concept of a father and a mother, a nuclear family, being reinstituted again. And, you know, even if dads who are hearing this may have blown it, maybe they were deadbeat dads themselves, it's never too late to repent of that and come back and pick up the pieces.
So true. It's so true. And growing up, I always wanted a relationship with my dad. He never was interested. He moved, like I said, he moved to Las Vegas. Met him when I was 15 years old. And even when I met him for the first time, my dad was actually heavily involved in the adult film industry. He was in, he had pornography addiction, I believe. He was in films. He actually worked in a porn shop in Las Vegas. First time I met him at 15 years old, I met him at that store because he wouldn't come see us.
Wow.
Now, my wife has me tell people it was family videos in the front and the bad stuff in the back and behind the shelf. But that's what it was. That was his job, was in the porn industry. And the reason why I tell you this is because I had to go down and meet him there. And then I invited him over to my uncle's house in Las Vegas when I was visiting out there, and he didn't show up. And he rejected me, even in his town that he was living in.
Yeah.
And he never pursued a relationship. I mean, there was a few things at the end where he would message me on Facebook or something like that. But there was never, he wanted a deep relationship with me. And I wish I could have had that. And if you're a dad listening to this, I want to encourage you to, even if you've messed up really bad in your kid's life, just like my dad did. My dad threw me to the cops. He did all kinds of stuff. But even if you messed up, try to pursue your kid's heart. Try to restore that. I would have loved for my dad to come back and say, hey, I'm sorry. I messed up. Can we have a relationship?
Yeah.
Now, sometimes kids aren't going to reject that. They might not want that relationship, but you just try. Try it. I want to encourage you to try it.
I think it's a great word. And if people do take that challenge and they take a chance, that's really what it is. And there's no doubt about it. For them, you're right. Some kids are never going to be able to look at their dad again, but a lot of them would. And it would be wonderful to be reconciled, even if it's something that's way too late. It's better to have what you can have. And I'm just sorry to hear that your dad continued in that abandonment, even when you're out there as an adult.
Yeah, and the thing is, I mean, God filled that gap, though.
Yeah.
God became my dad. I've embraced, you know, Psalm 68:5, a father of the fatherless and a judge of the widows is God in his holy habitation. I've embraced that he's my father, and he's given me mentors and people that filled that gap in my life. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I forgot he even existed sometimes. I forget he was even around, but because God filled that gap so much for me. Mm-hmm. Now, sure, there's still struggles and things like that, but there's a peace there because I know God filled that for me.
What's ahead for you and your ministry?
Right now, we actually just this year launched two new shows. Let's Talk About Fatherlessness is a show we launched to talk about the issue of fatherlessness. It just lays it out. We interview people that have either been through fatherlessness themselves or they've helped people that are going through it. We've had people like Gary Chapman on it, Stephen Arterburn, former NFL tight end. That's on YouTube. It's on a lot of the different podcast platforms. It's on our website, lifefactors.org. You can find that. We also have another show we launched because we have single moms that have been reaching out to us saying, hey, I have nobody to mentor my kids. And so we created the God is My Dad morning show. We already had the God is My Dad mobile app, godismydad.com. There was all kinds of resources for God is My Dad that you can download the app from the Apple and Google Play Store. But we wanted something that was fresh content every week.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, we can mentor these kids digitally. So we created the God is My Dad morning show. It's kind of a fun show. We have a devotional time. We have a famous fatherless time, just different segments that we do on it. We try to keep it interactive and fun for the kids, for teenagers. teenagers, for young adults, for single moms, grandparents, and grandkids. But that's on YouTube and on Facebook. You can go to guysmydad.com. Those are two new resources we have. We also established a, is it okay to tell more about?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
We established a network of churches. We have about 56 churches in our network so far. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to get one church in every county of the United States. I know it's a big goal, but one church in every county of the United States to sign up to be a God is My Dad church. And what that means is there are churches that have, we've gone through their doctrinal statement. We know they're a church that wants to reach the fatherless, and we can refer single moms and fatherless individuals to these churches, and these churches have access to our resources.
Well, that sounds like something they should want to do.
Exactly. And then some of the churches, they go even further, and they start a single mom support group. And so we have different single mom support groups popping up around the country, and they have curriculum that we've created, custom curriculum that they can use to disciple the single moms. And we also launched a single mom support group in Las Vegas last year, and it's been going amazing. And that's our pilot program. And we take the resources from there and put them across the country. So several different things happening right now.
Wow, that's exciting, man. And give us that web address one more time.
You can go to, so Life Factors Fatherless Ministries is our mother ministry. That's for people that want to help the fatherless. They want to get involved. They want to find the Let's Talk About Fatherless show. That's spreading awareness. That's resources for church and Christians. And then GodIsMyDad.com is for fatherless families. So if you know a fatherless family, refer them to that. Or if you're a single mom or grandparent raising grandkids, go to GodIsMyDad. That's a resource we created directly for the fatherless.
So how is it going with you and your son here at this conference?
It's going great. We're having a great time together. My wife and two kids, they're enjoying the water park and they're hanging out.
Yeah.
We're at the convention just going around meeting people, doing interviews and stuff like that.
Well, if you can't come to Orlando, there's always Jamaica, right? I mean,
exactly.
It's not too bad down here.
Yeah, it's not bad.
That's great. Sean Tice, thank you for being with me here today.
Thanks for having me on.
All right. With me right now is Don Schenck with TIDE, and I know that that is an acronym, I believe, right?
Well, it's a shortened version. It used to be the Gospel TIDE Hour when it was first started in 1946.
Okay.
And so we've shortened it to the TIDE Ministry. It's a little easier. And when we get into other parts of the world, when we are working with partners, now our partners go under different names in those countries, but as we have connections with them, it's a shame to say, but having the word gospel attached closes some doors at places.
Isn't that something?
And so, you know, some people have asked me, you know, why'd you take the gospel out of it? And no, we have not taken the gospel out. We still are focused on sharing the gospel around the world and helping ministries set up and utilize a media outreach. So we help them produce the content, and then we work with them, like we will buy airtime for them or organize where they can get it broadcast. And then we also help them on the other end to connect with the listeners. So they're not just putting this message out on the air for listeners to hear, but we want them to be able to adequately answer questions that listeners have, to connect with the listeners, to make disciples, and to plant churches. So there are indigenous church movements being set up.
You know, I think that's one of the most important things of any organization like yourself that is out there in the field. That's it, admirable to begin with. But just getting these, getting the word to them is only the beginning.
Yes.
And to have a local church that you can help plug them into is what really does it, right?
Right. And we feel called very much of God to take this, to focus on areas where there's limited access to the gospel. And there are so many people that just don't have the opportunity to hear about Jesus. It is amazing. If you look at the statistics, go to like joshua.org, joshuaproject.org. There's some of these places that track these things. The number of people that haven't yet heard the gospel or who are living in areas where there isn't enough gospel presence for them to realistically expect somebody to be reaching out and witnessing to them.
Mm. So what are you looking for in this new year, or the year that we're in right now? Well past New Year's now. What are you looking for in the future? What's going to be going on?
We're excited that just in April, we branched into a new country in North Macedonia. So we're now in the Macedonian language there with the pastor on church planting. We're also, we've been doing a TV program for children in the Hindi language in India. We're looking to develop that into two additional languages there. And also, we're broadcasting through SAT-7 across the whole Middle East and North Africa. We've been doing that in Egyptian Arabic, There are two other Arabic dialects that we're working on right now so that we can increase the number of people who would hear the gospel in that region.
That's wonderful. Yeah. How was it going from your perspective being at this conference and the impact that you're seeing the religious broadcasters, because that's something that mm-hmm. you're a part of with this movement as well. Mm-hmm. How is that helping what you do?
I'm incredibly encouraged here by some of the things I'm hearing in the sessions and the people I'm interacting with, to see that there is what I believe a growing sense of cooperation. I think too many times there's a little bit of a competition, ministries trying to sell themselves, and I'm seeing a greater move of being willing to not to say, hey, well, here's what we can do or here's what we do, but say, how can we together be partnering in this?
And that's exciting.
That's what it's all about, is that we are here to serve the kingdom and to serve God together.
How is radio working for you in these other countries? How does that work?
In some of the countries, we can get airtime in the country. In others, we have to have it broadcasting on shortwave because they are closed to the gospel. Radio is still very effective in reaching some of the tribal groups who live out in remote areas. We are transitioning and getting more content online, and people have cell phones everywhere now. And so getting content there.
Content can go through those cell phones in amazing ways. It's so funny you would say about shortwave, because we get our frequency in Orlando, it travels. We have people in Finland who listen to our radio station and write me saying, hey, we picked you up. I could hear this. Can you confirm this is who they think it is? And they write us. Mm-hmm. So that's just amazing. Yeah. And yet when you're over there using shortwave, it's clear, and people still listen to it because they're on they do it for hobbies over there. Yeah.
And the thing is, with radio going out in so many places, there is an attitude of, if they heard it on the radio, like here in the States, if it's on Facebook, it must be true, right?
Yeah, right. If it's on the internet, come on.
If it was on the internet. Yeah. But very much, people living in undeveloped areas, if they hear it on the radio, it carries the weight of authority. And so that's why it's so important that we get the gospel out, because there's other things they're going to hear.
Yeah.
And what they hear first is what they're going to generally put their faith in and trust in.
Well, I tell you, I love any mission organization that's taking the gospel and doing what you're doing. Thank you for the efforts. Thank you for the work. I know it's boots on the ground when you're there, when your organization is there. But boy, what a difference it makes.
Thank you. Thank you for the time to talk about the Tide here.
It's wonderful. Don Schenk with the Tide.
EC Waters Air Conditioning and Heat serves all your comfort needs. With over 40 years' experience, EC Waters is a top-trained comfort specialist, earning customers for life with integrity. No wonder EC Waters Air Conditioning and Heat has earned a 4.6 or higher out of 5 rating and reviews across all major online platforms. For all your comfort needs, call 407-603-9144 or visit ecwaters.com.
With me right now at the NRB is co-founder of Every Black Life Matters. It is Neil Mamman. Neil, we've been on the phone, but you're always in Idaho, and I'm in Florida, and yet the phone lines they connect us, and we're there
amazing?
Together. But here we are face-to-face, man. It's great to have you here.
Thank you for having me, Mike.
In the free state of Florida.
The free state of Florida, yes. May it ever be free.
That's what I say. So tell us a little bit about what's going on right now in the culture that is more divided, I believe I could say this, more sinister and more evil, that is prevalent in our culture than any time in my life. I'm just turned 70, Neil, and I've never seen a time that
you look
is
great, by the well, way. I would never have guessed that.
Well, thank you.
I was betting you were a lot younger than me.
No, I just turned 70. I've never seen anything like it. And we're really looking for people, I believe, all the world is, the moms and pops, the flyover states, all of us in America that believe in the foundations of the Judeo-Christian ethic, we're wanting somebody to stand up and say, enough nonsense, stop it, let's go back, let's believe the Bible. Let's do what we should be doing. And there aren't, in my mind, enough voices like yourself. And that's what you're doing.
Yeah. So, I mean, you said nonsense, and I think that's a key word there. When something, I always say, if something is so stupidly obviously wrong, it has to be, and yet people are doing it, it has to be planned.
Yeah.
Right?
It's not an accident. Yeah, they're that dumb, right?
I mean, people don't go around saying, yeah, men should compete with women. Yeah. Just by changing their name, they can now compete with women. And the person is like 600th on the men's league shows up as first on the women's league. You're like, well, something's wrong. It's like when I think it was a complaint, the NBA, the Women's Basketball Association, you know, they said, hey, how come we're not paid as much as the men? And a high school team of boys said, well, the reason you're not paid as much as the men is because we can beat you. And it was true because they could, that team was able to beat one of the best NBA women's basketball teams. So you realize that women are just not made differently than men. And so when you look at that and you go, there's something really stupidly wrong here, and nobody can actually believe this.
Yeah, I agree.
But you got to separate this up into the leaders and the followers, right? And you have to understand that what we've done is by sending our kids to public schools and allowing the public schools to be taken over, they've come up with a mentality of, there is no absolute truth. There is no objective truth. So the only difference between you and me, or not you and me, but me,
right.
me and some leftists, is not because we believe different objective truths are true. It's just we believe different things. So if I come and I say, look, I believe that men are not women, they're like, well, that's just your truth. My truth is this. Our clan, our group of people believes this truth. Your group of people believe that truth. And it means nothing. We don't care what, there is no truth, so we don't care what the reality is. We just believe this. So when you come and say, or when I come, or either of us go up and we say, no, this is the truth. They're like, no, no, no. You're just saying that because you're of the other clan.
Yeah, right.
And we're like, no, no, we're saying this because it's true, because we can use science. We can use, you know, and of course they like to use science on their own side. No, no. Whenever the science has been used correctly, it's been on God's side, because God's the creator of science, right? But at the same time, it's the argument has to start with, is there truth? Is there an objective truth?
Mm-hmm.
As my good friend Frank Turek, you know, he does, you know, you probably know about him well too. He does a conference in universities, and he starts with, is there an objective truth? Is truth real? Right? That's the first thing. Because if you can't establish that, and by the way, the answer to is truth real is quite easy.
Yes.
Because if somebody ever says there is no truth, you just say, is that true?
Yeah. That's right. That question has been asked by Pilate.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's been around,
thousands of years.
Thousands of years. And yet we're being called to believe this crazy lie that this thing is. I mean, we were talking earlier with Abraham Hamilton, who is here.
Good guy, good friend.
Yes, he's just amazing, and was talking about the fact that we have a Supreme Court justice just a year ago who is going in now to be in one of the most important positions of law in the United States for life, a position held for life, not able or not willing to be able to say what a woman is.
Right, because she knows that's their clan. Well, of course, I think in her case, so remember, we have to differentiate between the leaders and the followers. And in her case, she knows the truth. She fully knows the truth. She just knows that it's going to be unpopular for her to say it, so she's not going to say it.
Yeah.
I don't think she has any doubt what a woman really is, right?
I would hope not. I would hope she has no doubts at all.
And most of us have no doubts, but there are people who follow blindly, who've been... And so you have to break this down and understand that the reason we're in this situation is, as I said, is planned. It's been planned from the 1930s and 1950s, when the Marxists and the communists and... You know, the Hegelian Marxists from the Franklin Institute basically said we can't create a socialist America unless we break down the independent America.
Mm-hmm.
So this is all planned with that. And you have to understand with communism, the reason why it sells, a lot of people, and we've mentioned on the show, I come from a Marxist family.
Yes.
My father was an atheist and a Marxist, and my uncles were all Marxist. But what happens is the Marxist ideal, and a lot of people get confused. They look at China and they say, well, that's Marxism or communism. And it's not, because it's never worked, right? But what is the Marxism and communism that they sell the kids? they sell it because it's a stateless, classless society.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a stateless, classless society means there's no government, there's no classes. So when Fidel Castro went and sold the stateless, classless society to Cuba, which had a hierarchy and a crony capitalist class, they were like, oh, this is a great idea, let's do it. So Fidel Castro gets all the locals, the indigenous people who love the idea to go out and kill everybody and take over, and then they're supposed to turn it over and make it a stateless, classless. But now Fidel Castro has all this power. Why would he ever give it up?
Right.
And so he never gave it up.
Never
right?
did.
So, and that's the same thing that happened with Mao. That's the same thing that happened with Lenin and Stalin. So they get into power, and it never goes into the stateless. Not to mention the stateless, classless idea will not work. We know that it doesn't work because it didn't work for the Pilgrims back when they landed right. on Plymouth Rock. You know, the communal idea, just they were all starving. And then finally they decided, no, we've got to give everybody a plot of land. And suddenly they had so much that they were able to celebrate Thanksgiving, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the origin of Thanksgiving. But the reality is that the stateless, classless thing is so compelling to kids who see what is actually crony capitalism, and they call it capitalism. And so now, coming back to your winding it back to what's happening now, well, I think our a lot of our established Republican base are basically pawns of this whole system. And in many senses, I think that a lot of the establishment Republicans are controlled opposition.
Hmm.
They want to stay in power. They want all this. They will roll over. And it's unless we... Now, is the Republican Party Christian? No, but it's closest in principles to godly principles. So we've got to start there because it's going to be very hard to start our own party and do anything else, right? So what we need to do is take it back. And that means we need these hardcore conservatives who understand the principles of government, biblical principles of government, a lot of which is in my book, Jesus mm-hmm. is Involved in Politics, which I itemized those principles. And we need to go and make it happen. And here's the amazing thing. When those principles happen, the country prospers. Everybody prospers. Look at, we took Obama's economy. The country is falling apart. Horrible things are happening. Trump comes in, and I don't even know if he's a believer, but he says, look, he's surrounded by believers. He says, these are the principles we're going to. And within 4 years, we have the most booming, vibrant economy.
Energy independent.
Yeah. We've gotten rid of the ISIS. You know, mm-hmm. Obama said it couldn't be done. We've done so many things. And yet, within 2 years after Biden comes in, it's all back to the same thing.
Yeah.
So the change can happen. And it cracks me up when they say, oh, there's inflation. You know what causes inflation? It's not the interest rates. It's printing money.
That's right. And that's being done because of the amazing, just amazingly bad decisions that are being made that are just costing trillions and trillions of dollars.
You're spending money for nothing. And now, of course, not to jump into this, but California's talking about reparations. By the way, let me point this out. You don't ask reparations from people who never owned slaves, who probably came to the country after the slavery was all over. And by the way, slavery never benefited anybody mm-hmm. because every single person who made money off slavery, their entire lands, their entire property was all taken away from them and destroyed during the Reconstruction.
Yeah.
So nobody made any money on slavery. It was a horrible thing. And 800,000 of our boys died. That's 10% of all men in America died.
Isn't that something?
Right?
Yeah.
And this is the biggest price we've ever paid for anything. So we've all paid for slavery. And now for you to have reparations, I'll tell you, there is one group of people who should pay reparations. And I may have mentioned this before.
Yeah. Democrats.
Democrats. Exactly. They were there before. They were there before. They were there now. They got billions of dollars. They should be paying the reparations. Not me, because I didn't have any slaves. You didn't have any slaves.
Right.
But their party did. Mm-hmm. And their party fought for it. They were the Jim Crow people. I want Democrats to pay the reparations. Yes, give reparations to all black people, but it's got to be Democrats. A couple of conditions, though. You've got to have an ancestor who actually was a slave.
mm-hmm.
Right? Obama would not qualify.
Right. You know, it's really, this is a heartbreaking thing to realize that something is, let's say, far-reaching. I think that's pretty generous to say it that way, as far-reaching of an attempt to try to do something right as what this appears to be, and that they are actually believing it. They're actually talking as if this can be done.
Well, it's because Newsom wants to run for president.
Yeah.
Gavin Newsom just wants to run for president. He used... the marriage in San Francisco to run for governor, right? That was his leverage to fame to run for governor. Became lieutenant governor and then governor, right? And now it's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to do reparations. I'm going to run. So every leftist, every black person is going to say, oh, yeah. Now, the question is, I don't think California can. I mean, we left California, as you know. I escaped California. but now, because I was born in Ghana, I guess I could qualify as African-American.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we, my ancestor was not a slave. They were slave to the British, maybe, but not to the,
right.
not to the Americans. So we might move back to California. And hey, you know, if they're going to hand out money and they're stupid enough, I'm going to take it.
I get it. Neil Mumman, it's always great to have you here and to see what's going on with Every Black Life Matters. And so say hello to Kevin.
Yeah, Kevin, good buddy. He's here at the show. Kevin.
I think I saw him from a distance.
Yeah,
he's here.
Yeah, you should try and grab him. Kevin's amazing. Yeah. I tell you, I've never worked with a man I admire more before in any of the companies or anything. This man is just amazing.
Kevin McGarry.
Kevin McGarry, godly man. Just wonderful to work with. And he has got a new book coming out, DEI in 3D, which is going to talk about all the roots and foundations of DEI and how it's wrong and the alternative to it. I have a new book I'm working on, and it's called How to End Racism in America.
Wow.
And it's...
That's a great title. Yeah.
And I think we were talking about 2 to 3 months out. I'll definitely have to let you know when it's out.
Please, please give me a call. Neil Mumman, give us your web address.
Yeah, so our the Every Black Life web address is everyblm.com. My book, Jesus is Involved in Politics, is at jesusisinvolvedinpolitics.com.
That's it.
And that's the book that kind of you need to give to your pastor. Take him out to lunch, show him the book and say, hey, tell me why this book is wrong. Because he won't read it if you give it to him, but if you actually take him out to lunch and ask him about it, he will. You will try to read it.
Well, have a great conference, my friend.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it.
All right. And that was Neil Mumman, and that's about all of our time for today. Thanks for joining us. We'll have more interviews coming from the NRB tomorrow and on into next week. We hope you have a great day. We'll see you next time right here on The Shepherd.